Several months ago, we did a series on the book of 1 Corinthians, and as I think I said at that time, I wanted to do a series on 2 Corinthians as well. So this is going to be the day of starting a new series. And 2 Corinthians is probably, you know, a little more neglected than 1 Corinthians. There's a lot of meat, certainly, in 1 Corinthians, and a lot of problems that church is having. The book of 2 Corinthians was written about a year later than 1 Corinthians, about 55 or 56 AD, and was also written about a year before the book of Romans was written. So that's where it sits as far as Paul's letters. He wrote it from Macedonia. And like I said, it is frequently avoided, especially when it comes to teaching, because so much of the book seems to be Paul's defense of his apostleship. And I think we're all pretty convinced that he was an apostle. So maybe that's the reason sometimes people don't study it as much, because we're all convinced Paul is an apostle. He doesn't need to convince us, but he was dealing with that at that time. But we do need to study the book. There's good things that we can gain from it. And typically, people will look at chapters 8 and 9 about being cheerful givers, and also look at chapter 12 and speculate about what that thorn in the flesh was. Those are things that people will often study in these books, but there's far more to it than that. And there's also more to it than teaching us how to suffer, because that is something that is a subject in the book as well. Paul is teaching these brethren to try to build them up, build up their faith, and he also opens up his heart and his life to them in the context of this letter. So we do want to look at this letter over the next few weeks. That's not saying we won't take a side trip here and there if there's another subject that we want to study, but I do want to look at this book over the next few weeks. In 2 Corinthians chapter 12, we see how Paul makes a point at the end of his letter. 2 Corinthians 12, 19 through 20 says, "Have you been thinking all along that we have been defending ourselves to you? It is in the sight of God that we have been speaking in Christ, and all for your upbuilding, beloved. For I fear that perhaps when I come, I may find you not as I wish, and that you may find me not as you wish, that perhaps there may be quarreling, jealousy, anger, hostility, slander, gossip, conceit, and disorder." If you remember what was happening in 1 Corinthians, those concerns are probably not real foreign to what you think might be happening in the Corinthian church, because there were some issues there. But also, Paul could be talking about himself and Timothy and Apollos, and not for the primary purpose of defending themselves, but he wants these Christians to be built up and not be found in these sinful behaviors. And he uses himself as a reference point, his fellow workers, that they work together and they don't have these attitudes or shouldn't have these attitudes toward each other of bitterness and jealousy and gossip. He wants you to see these things, and he wants them to know what love looks like, as he already pointed out to them in 1 Corinthians chapter 13. And so there's a lot in this letter, not just Paul defending himself as an apostle. And so I hope that you'll see that as we go through this book and see what the purpose of it is for us, to help build us up and remove us away, or get us away from sins and into the state that we would like to be in permanently. One of the things that Paul mentions here in verses 3 through 7 is comfort in affliction. When it comes to needing encouragement and needing strength, one area where we need to be built up is when we are suffering. And when you read verses 3 through 7, you'll see that Paul uses the word comfort a lot. I don't know if you noticed that as Noah was reading tonight, how many times the word comfort was being used, but I'll just highlight it for you there. These are all words that are either comfort or have to do with comfort. 10 times, comfort or consolation. And so we obviously need comfort, or Paul had that on his mind quite a bit as he was writing this. He says, "Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercies and God of all comfort, who comforts us in all of tribulation, that we may be able to comfort those who are in any trouble with the comfort with which we ourselves are comforted by God." If you wrote that and turned it into an English teacher, you know, they would probably tell you you've used this word too much. But there's a purpose, obviously, that the Holy Spirit used this word over and over here. And so there are difficulties that people are going through. And Paul is wanting them to be strengthened through those difficulties. We need comfort for all that we go through in life and the difficulties and afflictions that we might face. So in verse 3 here, listen to this description of God. In verse 3, He is called the Father of mercies and God of all comfort. And that's a good way to describe God. I think we should think of God in that way. We talked this morning some about, you know, fearing God. And when some people think about God, it makes them shiver or shudder, because maybe they are not in the right relationship with God. So the way that you view God has a lot to do with the way that you're living or how you feel your relationship is at that time. But Paul is describing Him in a very positive way, describing God as the God of all comfort. And what does that give you? Well, it should give you comfort, right? It should give you comfort. This is the God that gives us comfort. He is the Father of mercies and God of all comfort, who comforts us in our affliction. And so Paul immediately, you know, kind of dives into the deep end here when discussing affliction. And it, depending on what translation you're using, it may be translated troubles, it may be tribulation. And really the word literally means, you know, pressure or compression or distress. And so the idea here with affliction, and affliction may not be the word that we always, you know, tend to use ourselves in our everyday English language, but you really should think about it as trials. It's something that's pressing, something that is a pressure, something that is an affliction, and that's what's being expressed here. Something that is distressing. And what Paul says about these things is that God comforts us in all this distress. He comforts us in all these afflictions. Notice what it does not say. It does not say God comforts us from our afflictions or removes the afflictions from us. I wish that it was that way. Don't you wish that's what it was? That God is promising to remove all of our discomfort and all of our afflictions away from us. So be careful when you read this that you see what it says and what it does not say. It says that God comforts us in our afflictions. So the afflictions may still be there. So comfort from God is not necessarily the removal of suffering. So when I think about comfort from pressure and trials, you know, whoever or whatever is causing that discomfort, you know, if I could just get away from that situation or get away from that person or whatever it might be, then the pressure is removed, right? And so that's the way we think when we're thinking about removing the pressure. But again, that's not the picture that's given here. It says that God gives us comfort in our distresses, in our difficulties. So that may mean that escape is not the route that you're going to be able to take. Escape from that suffering is not necessarily the goal that you have, but the recognition of God's comfort in the midst of suffering is the goal. The recognition of God's comfort in the middle of suffering is what you should look at and look forward to. So how do you receive that comfort from God? We would want to consider, you know, the promises of God and the faithfulness that God provides us comfort. And God, you know, through Paul here, is going to speak about these things later in the letter. But right now, we'll look at what Paul has to say in verse 4. In verse 4, he says, "Who comforts us in all our tribulation, that we may be able to comfort those who are in any trouble with the comfort with which we ourselves are comforted by God. So, what's he saying here? You see what he said about comfort in our afflictions? He didn't say that the afflictions are going to be removed. He is getting us to turn our attention away from ourselves and onto someone else. He says we comfort others with the comfort we have received from God. We share our comfort from God with those who are afflicted and with those who need comfort. So it's one of those things that you want to pay it forward, as we say today. That God's comfort doesn't terminate with us. We provide comfort as we have received comfort from God. So it's circular. One of the things that I think about when I read this is the relationship between parents and children. That parents will do everything that they can for their children. The children are young and they can't take care of themselves. And when they're very, very young, there's very little that an infant can do for itself except sound an alarm when there's something that they need. And then you take care of whatever that need is. As they grow up, parents continue to take care of the children. And then one day, they leave the nest and mom cries, dad probably cries too, but they leave the nest and then they don't need you as much. But then one day you get old and you start to need the child. The child starts taking on the role of the parent. Because a long time ago, the parent took care of the child. Now the parent is old and is not able to do what they used to do. So it may be that the child is going to take care of the parent. We did a lesson on this, some time ago called We Take Turns. And we do take turns in that regard. And so it's the child's responsibility later to take care of the parent. Another way that I've seen this exhibited in real life is when my sister passed away, and my mother received help from others or people that wanted to help her in her grief, and there were some things that were very helpful to her and some things that were the opposite of helpful, and grief is something that everybody does differently, it seems. And so during that process, my mom saw that, there's not really a whole lot of material that's been written about this subject on grief. And so she wrote down some of her experiences and put it in the form of a women's class workbook on the subject of grief, because she had never seen a book like that having been done before. And so she took something that was a very difficult time in her life and used what people had done for her to comfort her, and she put it down on paper so that she could in turn comfort others. And you've probably got things in your life or know of other situations that are very similar to this, where someone paid it forward and helped in this type of situation. God is telling us that the way that you're going to be comforted is you're going to also comfort others. And the way that you've been comforted by God, you in turn comfort others. Too often people are guilty of playing the comparison game when it comes to suffering. And rather than being a conduit of comfort, they'll hear, this situation happened to this person. Well, that's really bad, but let me tell you what bad is. And this happened to me, or this happened to my family. And so for some reason, we want to play one-upmanship in so many different areas of our life. I don't encourage anybody to watch Saturday Night Live, but there was a character on Saturday Night Live years ago, a woman who, that was her thing, is that anytime somebody said something, she was going to up that, and it was ridiculous the things that she would say just to one up. So do we play the comparison game in suffering? Rather than being the conduit of comfort, someone says that they are struggling and suffering, and then we proceed to tell that person how their suffering is nothing, that what I'm suffering is so much worse. I hope that's not what we do. That's really not being helpful. That's not being a conduit of God's comfort. You know, suffering is not a competition. But Paul tells us that the suffering can have a purpose. Look again at verse 4. Who comforts us in all of our tribulation, that we may be able to comfort those who are in any trouble with the comfort with which we ourselves are comforted by God. So sometimes we have to look, what is the purpose of this? Well, one reason I may have to go through some trials is so that I can be a help to someone else, is what Paul is saying. That God comforts me in my affliction. Why is He comforting me? So I can in turn comfort those who are in any affliction. So one of your purposes in trials is being able to comfort others. And you don't necessarily have to go through the same suffering to understand how to be compassionate to someone else. You just don't need to be trying to compare, you know, sufferings with one another and wallow in self-pity and attention-seeking, but we use our suffering and afflictions to comfort others. And it's very tempting to want to wallow in self-pity. It's very tempting to seek out attention, and we have to be aware of that. But our example in suffering and how we deal with suffering, it can bring comfort and encouragement to others who are suffering as well. I know I've mentioned this, you know, before, but I always think of Prince and Edith Schatz that were here for years, and we knew that they were suffering. We knew that they weren't feeling well, yet they weren't ones to complain. They were ones that were here every time that the doors were open, and you knew they weren't always feeling good, but they made an effort they didn't want to be a burden. They didn't want to complain, but you knew that they were suffering. So that was an example of how to deal with that. So throughout this letter, what Paul is going to do is he's going to affirm the good that can come from affliction. And I know that's not really what we want to hear. We don't want affliction. We don't want Paul to tell us that we're going to be afflicted and how great it is that we're going to be afflicted. But that's what he's saying. And in fact, as you go through this book, one of the criticisms that the Corinthians and others had about Paul is, you know, he was being persecuted a lot. He was afflicted. There were those that were trying to keep him from his mission. And, you know, he was imprisoned. There were all kinds of different things that happened to him. And people looked at that and said, you must not be an apostle if all these bad things are happening to you. Your sufferings that you're going through show that you're not really an apostle. You wouldn't experience so much trouble if you were a man of God. So Paul turns that argument, you know, from his critics, and he says that his troubles show that he is comforted by God, and he is using those things to comfort others. So he's saying, there is a reason for what I've had to suffer, and this is what I'm doing with that, and I'm using that for good. And that's really the point of verse 5. For as the sufferings of Christ abound in us, so our consolation abounds through Christ. I'm using those things. What God does for Paul, He's also doing for the other Corinthians. No matter what the degree was of the affliction, God's going to match it with the comfort that is needed. So Paul, Timothy, and others, they share in sufferings of Christ for their suffering for righteousness' sake. And they saw that their comfort is knowing that they were sharing in the sufferings of Christ. So that was one way that they were comforted. Again, as the sufferings of Christ abound in us, so our consolation also abounds through Christ. Now, if we are afflicted, it is for your consolation and salvation, which is effective for enduring the same sufferings which we also suffer. So we can come to understand the power of God through what is done through Paul here and the experiences that he had that he was able to use for others. So this may not be the truth that we like, that we are going to suffer and that we need to use those sufferings for good. But that's what Paul is saying. You grow in faith through suffering, not by avoiding suffering. In verses 8 through 11, we see that Paul explains to these Corinthians what had happened to him. And he's not just telling us about his problems, but he wants us to learn, you know, through these things to have endurance and to have comfort. Verses 8 through 11. For we do not want you to be ignorant, brethren, of our trouble which came to us in Asia, that we were burdened beyond measure above strength, so that we were despaired even of life. Yes, we had the sentence of death in ourselves, that we should not trust in ourselves, but in God who raises the dead, who delivered us from so great a death and does deliver us, in whom we trust that he will still deliver us. You also helping together in prayer for us, that thanks may be given by many persons on our behalf for the gift granted to us through many. And so what Paul says here is pretty extreme as far as the despair that he was feeling. Because he says, we were so utterly burdened beyond our strength that we despaired of life itself. We felt like we had received the sentence of death. We might put it in our words and say, you know, I just felt like giving up. I just felt like this was the end. And that's not typically what we expect to hear from an apostle. That we are so despaired that we just thought it was over. So what Paul is saying is we didn't see any way out of this circumstance. We didn't see any way that we were going to survive. And we like to think of Paul as a spiritual Superman. But when he says this, he's in the doldrums. He's down in the dumps. He despaired of life and thought they were doomed. And so, that being said, what was his comfort? You know, how did he endure? How did he find relief? Even though it says that he was, you know, burden beyond his strength to bear. So if you look at verse 9, it tells you, yes, we had the sentence of death in ourselves that we should not but trust in ourselves, but in God who raises the dead. So it was all about putting trust in God, not relying on ourselves, but we're going to rely on God. Why God? Well, God can raise the dead. If God can raise the dead, he can get us out of this situation as well. He knew that God was the answer to that. Paul had seen people in suffering. Paul was engaged in suffering himself. Paul saw suffering with a purpose. He saw the purpose in that suffering. And he said it was to cause him to rely on God's power and not on himself. So we really need that lesson. Trials can make you get rid of depending on yourself. Suffering and trials produce in us the recognition that there's no value in that, in depending on yourself. But the only response is to depend on God. And how did that happen? Well, his dependence on God was based on what he had learned. God raises the dead. God can deliver us. He delivered us from such a deadly peril, and he will deliver us. On him we have set our hope that he will deliver us again. So Paul set his hope on God to deliver him again because he had been delivered before in times of despair. And he's pointing out that God is a God of deliverance. He delivered Christ by raising him from the dead. God delivered Paul, you know, through this deadly peril that he's describing as well. So what he's done here in this paragraph, it's not really to focus on him and, oh, you know, we've been so utterly distressed and so depressed that we just gave up, you know, totally on our lives. That's not the point that you should see here, that Paul is trying to focus on himself. What he's saying is, I want to help you. I want to comfort you in the same way that I've been comforted by God. That when you reach despair, when you reach the bottom, that you don't have to despair. You can be delivered. You can endure affliction. So
look at verse 10 again. Who delivered us from so great a death and does deliver us, in whom we trust that He will still deliver us. He's done it before. He's going to do it again. And we trust that He will continue to do that in the future. That was one of the points that Paul made in the first letter. I'm not sure that I have it up on the screen here. I don't. But in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13, you remember Paul said, "No trespass or no testing has overtaken you that is not common to everyone. God is faithful, will not let you be tested beyond your strength, but with testing will also provide the way out so that you will be able to endure it." So Paul makes this point that you have to look for that way out, that you can endure it. You can endure testing. You can endure persecution. You can endure temptation. And Paul will make that point again at the end of the letter when he talks to them about the thorn in the flesh that he has. And so we'll talk more about that later, but he talks about how that had an effect on his life. And as David prayed this morning, you know, sometimes the answer is no. And when Paul prayed to God about that thorn in the flesh, it wasn't removed. Sometimes God will eventually end the trial, that whatever it is that you're enduring, and you'll be delivered from the affliction. Sometimes the trial will not end. But what happens when that's the case? Well, God's going to give you strength and comfort. You need to endure that pressure that you're facing. God uses these things so that we depend on Him. We're not depending on ourselves or anyone else. And then we need to consider what Paul has instructed us to do with that. God's comfort is not just to make me comfortable. It's to make us comforters. It's not to make you comfortable. It's to make you comforters. So if God has comforted you in any measure, then you are commissioned by God to comfort others. That probably includes just about everybody, doesn't it? Because everybody's been comforted by God in some way. And so we have this hope because we're all in this together, and we suffer, and we don't depend on ourselves. We become conduits of the comfort that we receive from God. We give that to others. So sometimes there are those that are very, very good at this, that are very good at comforting others. And then there are others of us that aren't so good at it. So what can you say or do to impart comfort to another person? Maybe you don't have to look very far around this room to find somebody that could use some comforting in suffering. And maybe if you don't know that they're suffering, you just don't know them well enough. And maybe the reason we don't know each other well enough is because we're not trying to. We're too focused on ourselves and our own suffering that we don't pay any attention to anybody else's. But verse 11 tells us, "You also helping together in prayer for us, that thanks may be given by many persons on behalf for the gift granted to us through many." So this is something that we can be doing every day for everyone, and that is help through prayer. Pray for each other. I think we do a pretty good job of that here publicly, and we should be doing that privately as well. Talk to God about how God can comfort those who are suffering. How can you be a conduit of comfort to those who are afflicted? In conclusion, let's read again the beginning of this lesson here. 2 Corinthians 1, 3 and 4. "Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercies and God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our affliction, so that we may be able to comfort those who are in any affliction with the comfort with which we ourselves are comforted by God." That's a lot of comfort, isn't it? But that's what it says, that's exactly what it says, and we have a responsibility to pass on that comfort that God gives us to others. So let's remember this And we will go throughout the book of 2 Corinthians to see what other lessons there are for us that we can apply to our lives. If any way tonight you are subject to the invitation, we can help you in any way. We invite you to come while we stand together and sing.
Jesus falling tenderly upon your ear, sweet is cry of love and pity.